Blogging the Boys presents Cowboys Radio with Rabs and McCool. Here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool.
Hello, howdy, and welcome to another edition of Blogging the Boys Cowboys Radio. I'm Landon McCool, and with me, as always, is Rabble Rouser. Rabble, we are 1 week into training camp. Is that right? God, it's like feels like everything got stuffed into 1 week. It's been very, very eventful.
Yeah, and in fact, we are about 2 weeks in, but it's gone so fast, it feels like 1 week.
Yeah.
They've now completed 11 training camp practices in 13 days, I think is right.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And interestingly enough, they've gotten through three practice phases, three blocks, in which they've worked in each of those on something discrete, on a discrete set of concepts or skills. And I think we'll talk a little bit about this later on in the podcast. And I think with a couple of exceptions, the roster is beginning to come into focus. I think we'll also chat about those a little bit.
Yeah, there's still certainly lots of questions, about what's going on. And I definitely have lots of questions about what you're seeing out there. But before we do that, let's make sure we plug Blogging the Boys. Blogging the Boys is your one-stop shop for all of Rabble's practice reports. You know, anything in the preseason game coverage, make sure you're checking out OCC stuff on as well. And his links for the camp practices that have the interactive Twitter information, which is really kind of cool. But beyond the training camp as well, into the preseason, regular season, make sure you're going to Blogging the Boys. Make sure you're hitting their Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and follow them on Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. So let's get right into this. Let's break this down the same way the Cowboys break down their practice schedule. We'll do that in two ways. One, kind of going by the schedule during the week, as you've laid out for us, it's basically they work on base on Wednesdays, 2 minutes on Thursdays, goal line and short yardage on Fridays. And we've seen them complete three of these, as you term them, blocks, and each block has roughly corresponded to the weekly in season schedule. So, how does this, kind of feed into how the team will disseminate information during the regular season? Is this kind of, it seems like it's a pretty straightforward correlation to how the team will be installing during the week as well.
That's right. I think this is really important. We've talked a lot about thinking of training camp as football university, mm-hmm. Or football college. And so, if I'm a coaching staff, what I'm going to want to do is to try to say to myself and to my fellow coaches, how can we optimize the learning environment for the players who are basically our students? And so, football players are used to learning things in very specific ways. And so, as you just said, the regular in-season game week, they changed it a little bit, I think, last year, where they now have Monday off and then they come in Tuesday and they review the film, get in a workout, et cetera. And then on Wednesday, they begin to prep for the following opponent. And so on Wednesday, they install the base, which has a lot of running, which is one of the reasons why Romo always took Romo Wednesdays off last week, mm-hmm. because, he didn't.
It's a lot of run periods.
It's a lot of run periods, yeah. Exactly. And then on Thursday, they basically go to the goal line and short yardage stuff. And then and that's oftentimes the day that they wear pads during the week. Sometimes that's also Wednesday. And then on Friday, they go to goal line in 2 minute. And so each of these has a kind of interrelated set of concepts and skills. So if we think about short yardage and goal line, the personnel groups are oftentimes very different for those. Sometimes they're the same, but you tend to have a little heavier set. Maybe you'll bring in a third offensive tackle on the goal line. The defense oftentimes goes with five or six linemen. But for the most part, other than that, all the concepts are the same. The route combinations tend to be the same. The blocking techniques tend to be the same, et cetera. And so by lumping in those together, what you're really doing is teaching a set of concepts. And this is even more important when we, I think, extrapolate this to training camp, in which we're really thinking more about concepts as opposed to specific plays. And so if during the second phase, for example, of training camp this year, the Cowboys worked a lot on no huddle and hurry up offense and situationally, but also all of the kind of concepts that go into a three wide, passing type of offense, third down offense, et cetera. So there's a whole different set of blocking techniques, coverage techniques, et cetera. And so for a 4 day period, the Cowboys players had an opportunity to drill those each day again and again and again. And so not only physically, but intellectually. So they'll talk about it in position group meetings. They'll go out and practice it in the walkthrough. Then they go watch the film of the walkthrough and talk about it more. And then obviously they get to go out for the main practice, in which they do this with their position group. And then they do it against opponents from the opposing position group. And then they get to incorporate this into the whole larger scheme when they do the 11-on-11. And then at the end of the night after dinner, they all go watch the film again. That's a lot of reps. So mm-hmm. that's each day. And then over the course of 4 days, they get to continue to hone these basic concepts. So they may be running different plays and applying the concepts differently. But again and again and again for 4 days straight, they get to work on these concepts. And I think that's really important when we think about the goal of training camp being to get these guys past their lower division work and prepared for upper division work, you know?
Yeah, and it's been a lot of, kind of just building from the ground up, like you talked about, just kind of installing the basic plays, in base, and the basic plays in 2 minutes. And then, as they go, they'll add in more, they'll fly in a wrinkle. I mean, this is the time also when you see them kind of floating position change stuff, trying different combinations with different people. Maybe they'll throw in Weems as, like, I think I saw today they threw in Weems at left tackle with the starting OL, just to kind of see how these guys interact with each other and see how different combinations play out. It's interesting how they kind of, they're working on building the very base personnel, but they're also kind of working with different personnel groups to see how players fit with other groupings of players.
Absolutely, yeah. And, just does the way this guy incorporates these techniques fit next to the way this guy does, et cetera. Yeah. And so I think that the larger takeaway is, if you don't think about training camp this way, or for the uninitiated, you can come to a training camp practice and it looks like chaos, utter chaos. They break into this group and then a horn sounds and everyone runs over here and they do something different and then a horn sounds and you're like, "What? I don't understand. Why are they doing this?" But when you think about, at the micro level, at various micro levels, as it builds to a kind of macro level, it begins to sort of become clear and make a little bit more sense.
Yeah, it is kind of cool to, like, once you start to get the rhythm of what they're doing, to see, them break off into individual groups, like you talked about, work on techniques that are going to play into when they all come together for a 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 when they get together. It's kind of just interesting to see the small pieces come together for the larger piece, and then, to see them put that all together with the defensive line now getting with the linebackers to work on run fits, and the offensive line getting together with the tight ends to work on combo blocks and doubles. And, it's just kind of cool to see them all split off into smaller groups, come together in a little bit larger groups, and then kind of come together whole offense versus whole defense and try to, incorporate all that each individual group has learned into the larger piece of the picture. So,
yeah. And the great thing about that is it gives them an opportunity to break it back down into the smallest building block again the next day.
Yeah, because you look at what you saw, when you're in 11-11, and then you kind of can revisit and say, well, hey, let's zoom in a little bit and look at your footwork at this. I know you were trying to focus on the play, but, your hand technique wasn't right. Or, it's just kind of cool that they can, zoom in and out from micro to macro view to kind of make the adjustments as needed. But, always knowing that, if something needs to be adjusted, we're still early in training camp, so that can be adjusted in a simple period that where they're broken up by position,
Yeah, and if you have a 4-day phase where you're working on the same set of concepts, that gives you three times to return, after reviewing the 11-on-11 film, when you're subjected to applying these techniques in a pressure-packed situation, you can then return back to the base building blocks, as you were saying, and then build toward another pressure-packed, competitive situation at the end of 11-11, and then return again. So it's a pretty cool way of teaching and learning.
Yeah, before we move on to the competitive period stuff, which is obviously really interesting stuff, I wanted to ask, we've talked a lot about how the brilliance of the continuity of the team and how it seems like the schedules are very, very similar to what they were last season. What's different? What have you seen? Have you seen anything that is you know, that they may have altered a little bit, they may have tweaked, whether it's be in scheduling or how the teams are coming together, or maybe even how Garrett's moving around the field between drills. Is he doing that even more this year? Or is there anything that seems different, or does this really just seem like a kind of a carbon copy clone of what we saw last year at this point in training camp?
That's a really good question. I think that for the most part, it's a carbon copy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not to say that they're, you know, it's robotic in any way, or that it hasn't been laid out very thoughtfully in any way.
We're not very far into this, so it could be right. That this is made to be exactly the same, and that, you know, whatever changes they wanted to make might come later on. But I just wasn't sure if since you've been there every day, I just wasn't sure if you had seen something that maybe looked a little different than previous years, or specifically last year.
I think the key difference is, and this is in many ways the reason that I think they've continued to adhere to last year's schedule, is they are approaching this with a greater sense of continuity and confidence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talked last podcast about all the benefits of continuity. And one of them is that, you know, they're so familiar with these concepts now, particularly defensive guys, even though Marinelli's only been the coordinator 2 years, Kiffin was rather the year before that. And so, you know, a lot of the core ideas, core ideological principles have remained the same.
Okay, cool. So let's move on to the competitive periods. You know, so they basically what happens is that they get broken up into three groupings. An offensive line and defensive line is one. Wide receiver, cornerbacks is another. And then tight end / running backs and linebacker / safeties. So I guess let's kind of discuss this sort of in that order. So just starting with the big guys, you know, what has stood out to you in some of these competitive periods? Like, who shined, you know, like specifically in the trenches compete periods? Who has stood out? Who do you think needs to step it up? What do you got for us in the inside stuff, Rabble?
Okay. So I think that we might, as collective Cowboys Nation, have to wrap our minds around the possibility that the offensive line is going to be better than it was last year.
I've said since last year that I thought it was going to be better than this.
You know, Tyron Smith is now, I think, the best player on the team. Mm-hmm. I went into training camp thinking it was Dez, and Dez is, I mean, this is no slight against Dez, but Tyron Smith is invincible. He's really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Frederick and Martin are both better. Leary has actually gotten much better. The only person I'm not sure about on the offensive line, frankly, is Doug Free, and in large part that's because he's been nursing a sore foot, but he's also gotten beat a few times. So I think one of the open questions about the offensive line is, can Free return to some semblance of the Doug Free we saw in games 1-6 last year before he got injured against Seattle? Because he was very good then, and the offensive line in general was and the running game were dominant. Okay, so I think the offensive line is better and deeper than it was last year. But more impressive is the advances that have been made along the defensive line. You know, we've talked about this when we've sat and watched camp last couple days. You know, last year we were watching the blue-white scrimmage, for example, and, you know, Martez Wilson had a big game, and he maybe had a pick six, and, you know, and we were all a flutter. We're like, oh, Martez Wilson, he's gonna be this sort of like out of nowhere, you know, defensive end project that Rod Marinelli turns into a solid contributor. He's gonna be this year's George Selvey. And in fact, he got cut and didn't make the team.
Yep.
And in some ways he became the poster child for something that characterized what we've been doing the last couple of years, which is this kind of wing and a prayer approach to the defensive line. And this year, the defensive line has made, you know, a light year's steps forward. So not only did they add talent, we've talked a lot about the talent they added in the offseason, but there are several guys who have absolutely transformed themselves. I think the most improved player on the team is DeMarcus Lawrence. He has remade his body, as a lot of people have already commented, and has, you know, always had a lot of – he was sort of – he was a guy from Georgia, always was sort of country strong, as they say. But, you know, he's weight room strong now.
Yeah.
And he's, if not quicker, at least as quick as he ever was. And when you take that quickness and translate it to the strong side end. He's going to be playing against right tackles who just don't have the kind of athleticism to match up against him. So returning to what I just said about Doug Free.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Part of that is Doug. One of the questions is that Doug Free, or is that just the fact that DeMarcus Lawrence is going to be doing that to right tackles all season? Because, you know, there's been a couple times where he used a combination. He turned power into speed against Doug Free and like got him off balance and then made a quick little move, and Free didn't have an answer.
I'd almost love to see Lawrence. I haven't seen it yet, but maybe I have. But I'd love to see Lawrence go against Tyron, just because I'd like to see. You know, like, it'd be a good marker for Lawrence to see just how far he is, you know.
That's a great point, yeah.
Because that has been the issue, and you and I did have kind of an extensive conversation about this the other day at practice, that, you know, what percentage is Free, not, you know, Free struggling, and what percentage is DeMarcus Lawrence just being an absolute badass? And I think it's kind of tough to know because, you know, those two are such question marks. I mean, Free, we just don't have a feel. Like, you know, it'd be different if it was another player. I mean, obviously they don't play tackle, but like if it was like Leary or something, you know, where a guy is coming into the season healthy, and we had a decent idea of what he was like, you know, at the end of the year last year, maybe that would be a better barometer for how much of this is, you know, the offensive player and how much of this is the defensive player. But the problem is that it's a combination of Free having a hurt foot that, you know, he's still kind of recovering from. You know, we didn't really see where he was as a player just in his game at the end of the season as much because he was out. And then Lawrence, obviously being the most improved defensive lineman, Rushman, though I think you could also make an argument for Tyron Crawford because I think he has been amazing. I mean, even more amazing than I expected coming in. How much of that is Crawford just being really incredible and kind of coming into his own? I think it's just there's two question marks there which make it kind of tough to like hash that out. So I'm excited to see what and again, it's the first preseason game, so, you know, it's not going to mean a ton, but it will be good to see Lawrence getting some snaps against a different offensive tackle just to see what he can do.
No question. And I think that, you know, so you mentioned both Lawrence and Crawford, and I think a couple other guys who have really flashed, Jack Crawford,
yeah,
in relation to Tyrone, who I think was in many ways, much like his namesake, a man without a position last year. Mm-hmm. They've decided to move him inside to tackle, and he's making a really strong bid for the backup three technique because, mm-hmm, you know, he's got a kind of level of quickness that isn't exceptional at defensive end, but is exceptional at defensive tackle. But he also plays with enough power to hold up a tackle. So you've got the two Crawfords who are both very good, and another guy who's been making a lot of really, really good plays the last week or so. The light bulb seems to have come on for Devon Coleman.
Yeah.
You know, he and Ken Bishop, you know, we talked a lot about them last year as the kind of stumpy twins, you know, Ken and Stumpy. And and they both kind of faded away as the season progressed. And Devon Coleman, you know, didn't even really, I mean, he started game one, and then by the end of the year, I don't think he was even suiting up. And they seemed to become very disenchanted with him.
Bishop definitely hit a wall. I mean, Bishop was playing at the end, but kind of hit a wall. And then I think, if I remember correctly, he had a pretty decent game against the Packers. Like, it almost like it had turned back, the light had turned back on for Bishop a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's pretty standard for rookies. You know, they're 10 games in and they're like, okay, I'm done. It's time for the bowl game now.
Yeah, exactly. And so, they just wear out and then they catch back up, you know, so because they're young. So
those guys are both flash. I mean, and honestly, those two guys in one-on-one pod drills give Travis Frederick everything he can handle. They're both, I mean, he cannot deal with Bishop's power, and he has a real hard time with a combination of power and quickness that Coleman possesses. So there's a lot of, and in Terrell McClain, you know, before he got dinged,
was
flashing incredible quickness. So there's a lot of depth and a lot of options on the interior of the offensive line, the defensive line, which is, I think, something that we were not expecting. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of us were thinking defensive tackle had to be one of the priorities. They had to get a first or second day defensive tackle in the draft, and we were talking about all the guys we loved so much. And I think maybe the Cowboys thought, well, yeah, if we can get good value on a guy, we'll go for it. But we also have some dudes here who we think can play a little bit, and training camp is is proving them to have been prescient, so to speak.
So let me, can I ask real quick? I mean, just because that is an interesting grouping, those three, and I'll bring them up, the Jack Crawford, Bishop, and Devon Coleman, right? Of those three, how many of those can play the nose tackle, do you think, on first down? On a rundown, let's say that. Because what I ask is because I've seen all three of those guys play the one tech at some point. You know, obviously Bishop kind of was, you know, I think drafted to be a nose, and then they found out that he could do some things in three tech. But it's interesting to me that when, you know, we went into team stuff the other day and Nick Harden, Hayden was, Hayden was out, I guess kind of with a strained back or something. He was doing cord stuff with a, you know, minor injury. They had Devon Coleman in there playing the nose. And I found that to be a little bit interesting just because, I mean, how much does Devon Coleman weigh? Like 290 at the most? Right? Like, so I'm wondering, in your opinion, and especially after seeing what we've seen, do you think all three of those guys, Jack Crawford, Coleman, and Bishop, could play the nose tackle, or are a couple of those guys exclusively three techs?
I would say that both Coleman and Bishop can play the nose if necessary, because they're both so squatty. Mm-hmm. You know, Bishop certainly has the power to you know, sort of get down and take on the double team. And I think Coleman has a lot of power, but he also has sufficient quickness to, you know, to get somebody's shoulder really quickly and put at least one of the two members of the double team at a disadvantage. I don't know that either of them's ideal as a one tech, but I think they can both do it.
I don't know that Nick Hayden's ideal at the.
I know. If Carl Davis had been there, they would have drafted him instead of Chaz Green in the third round, because I think that they would still like a guy who has some size but also has the requisite athleticism to play this scheme. Agreed. I think one other thing on the lines before we move on. You know, you and I talked about this at camp, I think yesterday. About a year ago today, you know, this period in camp last year, we were bemoaning the fact, or bemoaning is probably overstating it. We were wondering aloud what it meant that the offensive line in particular, but the offense generally, was dominating the defense. Mm. And it was almost exactly this, you know, 10 practices in last year, where the offensive line had a couple days there where they were just opening up these wide swaths in the running game and the defense was getting gouged. And we didn't know what it meant at the time last year. You know, our question was, does this mean the offensive line is really, really good and the defense is solid? Or does it mean that the offensive line is okay and the defense is historically bad? And, you know, we talked about the fact that the 2014 season sort of proved out which of those was true, which was that the offensive line was really, really good and the defense is pretty solid. And so the offensive line on Saturday during the goal line absolutely obliterated the defense. Mm-hmm. And Jason Garrett and Rod Marinelli – you know, we're cursing at them, and there were, you know, bushels of F-bombs being cascading down upon the defense's head, et cetera. And
a cornucopia of curses.
Indeed, indeed. Mm-hmm. And apparently they were challenged in the team meeting afterwards, et cetera. And they came out and they played better Sunday, just as they did last year.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about the offensive and defensive lines here, the offensive line is still dominating, but again, this is why we want to see them play against the Chargers, and more importantly, in, you know, a couple 3 weeks when they actually play all the starters, to see just like what does this mean? Because it could mean that the offensive line is awesome and the defensive line is very, very good, or it could mean that in fact we're going to have some real problems stopping the run inside because of all the reasons you just talked about, which is who really other than Hayden is the one technique? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's important to note on Saturday that inside was collapsed when Hayden was not in there.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing is, and I think we should make a more conscious effort to give Hayden credit where credit is due, because, you know, honestly, we've been trying to cut this guy for 2 years and no one's done it yet. And yeah. I, you know, props to him on that, because he's made himself useful, to say the
sure
least.
Sure has.
So, yeah, but it was good to see the defense respond. And I think part of, you know, I think your larger point of, since we have better information on what this offensive line is, we have a little bit clearer picture of maybe what the defensive line is. I think is true. And it was good. It's good to see. You know, look, when this team gets stuffed in a run period, I get excited because I know this team can run the ball. Like, I know that offensive line can run block. You know, I'm not scared about that. But I do have questions on how well this defense can stop the run. And every time they do, it's a win because this is a damn good offensive line. They may not face an offensive line as good as this. And yeah. So, you know, it's good to see the defense take some wins, you know, maybe a little bit more frequently lately than they would have been a year ago this time. You know, and the other thing, too, I think to consider is that they're still getting Sean Lee involved, starting to get him back into the 11-on-11 stuff. I mean, he's been basically involved in all of practice, and then they had kind of started out holding him out of compete periods and 11-on-11s and anything that was, you know, close to – anything that got close to live hitting, he basically was stepping out. But now they started working him in. You know, I know some people have written this guy off, but Rolando McClain is still yet to get in there. And I think his presence gets felt when the run periods are ramping up. And, you know, I think a couple other guys that may have surprised us a little bit, and we can get into this a little bit later on, but, Kyle Wilbur, again, to me, has shown up, and I think now that he's got his hands on that Sam linebacking job, he may not want to let it go. So
I agree. So let me make one last point about the respective offensive defensive lines.
Yes,
and
please.
I think we should move on.
Get us on track. Thank you.
And that is that. You know, the battles that one of the training camp battles that I think we most eagerly anticipated was Greg Hardy versus Tyron Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, this in some ways, the fact that thus far in camp, Tyron Smith has basically owned him. You know, Greg Hardy's done okay a couple times, but for the most part, I would say, you know, Smith's winning 8 out of 10 battles, maybe more. And we've sort of thought, okay, that's really about Tyron Smith. But in the last couple days, you know, we saw this yesterday, and then we saw it again. We saw it Sunday, and then we saw it again. Let's see. Wait a second. I'm off a day. We saw it Monday and Tuesday in camp.
Yeah.
Where Greg Hardy got better at swatting Smith's hands away and keeping Smith's hands off of him and was able to make a nice inside move. And so this is something that I think that we've gotten away from a little bit because Hardy conducts himself like such a pro's pro. And he practices so hard, and he seems quite fit, is that – the man hasn't played football in a long time.
Yeah, it's been over a year.
You know, and there's a lot of rust that guy needs to knock off.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, we're going to see him, even though a lot of the other kind of seasoned veterans who, you know, who have the same kind of status that he has aren't going to play against the Chargers. I think we're going to see Hardy play against the Chargers because I think he and the coaching staff realize he needs to get as much work in as possible before he begins his suspension. But also just because he's been away for so long. So he knows everything, but he's got to get it back in his body. He's got to become reflex. And so I think the idea that Hardy hasn't yet fully been Hardy. We haven't got the full Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's still in the process of rounding into form is also something that we should be excited about. That,
yes.
That we're going to get as the preseason progresses and then even more importantly as the season progresses, we're going to get a better and better Hardy.
Just an inside note for some of you guys that haven't gotten a chance to get out to training camp. It's awesome to watch Hardy go against Smith. Obviously, I mean, I don't think that's a surprise, but it's really great because what happens is that, and especially when he gets beat by Smith, like he goes 110% like a crazed animal, arms flying everywhere, and Smith is kind of calmly sitting in his seat, just like keeping him at arm's length, and he's, you know, sprinting and his arms are swinging. Hardy now is just, you know, he's just like he really does kind of live up to that Kraken nickname because he looks like some sort of, you know, octopus with all arms and legs just attacking Smith, and then once the rep is over, it's crazy. He doesn't loaf back to his side, the defensive line side. Like, he sprints back, and then he starts screaming at himself. Like, this guy is a crazy person. I love it. I love watching him. Like, he's just an animal. Like, he's just a caged animal that they release on offensive tackles. And you see it in his game, you know? It's not like – this isn't a – this. Not to get off on a huge tangent of this, but – this isn't DeMarcus Ware. And DeMarcus Ware was fantastic, amazing. I mean, obviously, his numbers speak for himself. His game speaks for itself. But the excitement, like the fear that that Hardy, I think, you know, puts into the opposing offenses and the kind of just pure excitement that he puts in his own teammates is something that we haven't seen like on a defense. And it's the same kind of indescribable quality that we saw when McLean showed up last year, where it's just like he's mean. He's a mean SOB, and he's coming after you with everything he's got, and he's going to work the entire time and just, you know, like a terrifying creature coming to destroy your family, you know, as opposed to like as opposed to like Ware, who's kind of like this smooth athlete who is just, you know, more athletic than you. He's always going to find a way around. Hardy's looking to destroy you and then anybody who gets in his way, and then the quarterback. Like, he's just looking to destroy everything in his path. And I love that element in our defense that I feel like we've added a couple pieces in the last 2 years that has come on, where now we're going to hurt you. Like, you know, we got guys out here that are looking to hurt you.
Yeah, and he's the Kaiser Sose of defensive linemen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's unbelievable, like how just the you know, you say toughness, but I mean, not that Ware is a tough, but I guess this the pure meanness or you know, the caged animal mentality has really kind of been inserted into this lineup over the last few years. And I've noticed it too, before we move on, with Tyron Crawford. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it, but like in interviews, but also in his body language, like this offseason, like he started out as kind of just this nice guy, and he seems to have gotten a little bit of that mean streak in him too, which I love. I'm loving it. So
it's becoming an edgy bunch, which I really, really look forward to seeing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we won't get into all the thing, but if you're going to take risks on players that are, you know, edgy, then you want to see a return in that side of the investment, that you see guys that are, you know, willing to go out and hurt somebody if they need to, willing to do what it takes to get the job done. And I don't mean actually injure somebody. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, inflicting pain and inflicting their will upon a guy, making a guy submit instead of just being beat. Right. You know?
And they enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So with that in mind, let's move back a couple spots in these lineups and go to receivers and corners. The little guys in comparison. So who has stood out to you amongst them, and who has stood out in a negative way?
Okay, so a couple of hits to start this off. I think that the most improved guy on the wide receiver side is probably Cole Beasley.
It's unbelievable, man.
Like, he's uncoverable. He's just uncoverable. And he's beginning to expand his route tree. You know, last year we saw him go deep, you know, or at least over the middle on kind of intermediate routes a couple times. But for the most part, he plied his trade and plied it excellently, you know, within 8 to 9 yards of the line of scrimmage. And then oftentimes he would turn something into a bigger play because he would, you know, juke a guy, break a tackle, et cetera. But very seldom did he make the reception deeper. In camp, we're seeing him actually make receptions deeper. So he's expanding his game, which of course is going to put even more terrifying tape in front of defensive coordinators. Mm-hmm. But I just, like, there's nobody who can cover him. Even Orlando Scandrick, who's, you know, the best slot corner on the team by far and one of the better slot corners in the league, says, I don't know what to do against this guy.
Yeah. It looks really frustrating for Scandrick.
I think it really is. And you know, Beasley says, oh, Scandrick, I mean, it's not like Scandrick sucks. You know, Beasley says, oh, no, Scandrick's the hardest guy to go up against because he's always showing me something different. He's a really smart player. He makes me really work. He makes me hone my game. And yet, you know, Scandrick really can't cover him.
Yeah.
And then the other kind of quick note is that this cornerback group is as deep – I don't know that I want to say as talented, but as deep as any I've seen in a long time. You know, when you look at Cowboys history, the Cowboys have had a lot of awesome defensive linemen. The Cowboys have had their share of very good linebackers. The Cowboys have even had some really good safeties. But they have not had a lot of good corners. You know, there's like Cornell Green and Everson Walls and, you know,
Dion,
Mel Renfro, and but Dion was a kind of rent-a-corner for a couple of years. you know, if you look back to those 80s teams with the Doomsday 2 with, you know, Randy White and Harvey Martin and Tootall Jones up front, you had like Mark Washington at corner. You had Benny Barnes at corner. It was the while where Dennis Thurman was playing corner. Mm-hmm. You have, I mean, you know, the 90s teams, you know, Kevin Smith was solid. Pup was okay. But we've never had great corners, and we've never had this kind of depth. There are six guys here, you know, all the way down from Orlando Scandrick down to Tyler Patman, who can play.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the other thing about that is the Cowboys have really placed a high priority on getting a stable full of long corners. So they have a bunch of guys who are in the 5'11 and, you know, 5'8 up to the 6'1 group, which is, you know, nice long corners. And the guys who aren't 6 foot have long arms like Mo Claiborne. So there's a bunch of guys who can now go out and match up physically with the big tall corners that that prevail here, that predominate in this league. And so, you know, they've done a really nice job of remaking this position as well as the defensive line.
It is shocking. I mean, I guess that was the thing that it was, is that, you know, you look up and suddenly, and I think it's because of the way the whole thing unfolded. I mean, we drafted a kid, you know, we had hopes for Patman, but he came in better than any of us expected. And then, of course, Mo Claiborne, it's like it was a gravy situation with Claiborne. It's like, oh, he's playing in training camp? Fantastic. That's great. Like, that was what our expectation was of this kid. And he's really played lights out. Like, I mean, he's really, really played well. And, you know, I just think that it's gotten to a point now where, you know, Carr's going to be out a little while with the broken hand. They just finished surgery, so, you know, he'll be back once he's cleared to fly. So, you know, probably for a good portion of the preseason, he's probably going to be limited at the very least. But what it's going to do is it's going to get a chance for these guys who, you know, some of these down rushing guys who really just need reps. Like, you know, Mo Claiborne just needs a lot of reps. You know, Corey White, I mean, that guy has experience, but he's been really great so far. And then, you know, Patman, obviously, just being a young guy, he needs reps. But, I mean, he's been fantastic so far. It's so crazy to me how this whole defense, and I think it kind of happened to a certain degree last year too, where people are sleeping on this defense because they look at the players that they had, you know, at the end of the previous season. This happened a lot in 13-14, but I think it's still going to happen again in 14-15, is that you look at the players that were on the roster, at the end of the roster, on the active roster, and you think, oh, okay, well, no, this guy. But what you don't consider are the guys that are waiting in the wings, that have been also spending all offseason working out and getting ready. You know, I think guys like Patman, who, you know, he was on the active roster, but he was still, like, getting a lot better every single day. Mo Claiborne was down to 150 pounds after his surgery, so he's basically rebuilt his whole body, which in turn, I hope, has kind of rebuilt his confidence. And it's just so funny that, you know, we kind of, you know, in general, but even before Jones got drafted, we probably look at that whole position group and go, I don't know, we don't have anything, really. And suddenly we're six deep at corner. And suddenly, you know, we're talking about, you know, I mean, people are talking, I don't know that I'm necessarily talking about, but people in general are kind of talking about, you know, possibility of trading a corner, you know, I mean, because we have a surplus of them.
So, and, you know, we're talking right now about six guys, right? So we're talking about Scandrick, Carr, Claiborne, Jones, Corey White, and Patman. But the truth is there's also some other guys who probably don't have any chance of making the roster who are playing really well in camp.
Ross is playing really well.
Joel Ross is playing well. This number 33, Jason Wilson, mm-hmm. The kid from Central Michigan, is playing really well. And there's another really tall corner, guys like 6'2", named Robert Steeples. And I think he's got a little bit of trouble keeping his weight above his feet because he's so tall.
Yeah.
But he's coming on, and he's a big physical guy, and, you know, he might be a kind of guy be really interesting to develop and see if he can, you know, turn into something in a year or so.
Maybe a practice squad guy.
I mean, they've done an amazing job of collecting, tremendous competitive depth, throughout the cornerback roster. I have to say, though, that's not the case with the wide receivers necessarily. You know, you were asking earlier about the most disappointing player, and I would say the most disappointing player among those two position groups is Devin Street. We heard a lot in the offseason and during the mini camps and such that you know, Street was really coming on, that he was going to challenge Terrence Williams for the number two receiver spot. And, you know, had taken advantage in many ways of the fact that Dez Bryant wasn't around. So the Terrence Williams stepped up to the number one spot. And so he was number two, and, it, you know, he had remade his body and all these things. And the guy I see in camp is a guy who doesn't, he's not able to get open. So, you know, one thing about Terrence Williams is he doesn't get open until very late in the route. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for the better part of the route, he looks a lot like Devin Street, but then he, you know, he uses a little leverage and he uses his burst to get open at the end of the route, which is the only place where you need to be open. And Devin Street doesn't have that yet. Whether he ever will or not, it remains an open question, but he's always covered when the ball's thrown to him. Now, he makes some great catches, but he's involved in contested catches or contestable catches far too often. Yeah. And I think that that's, I was hoping to see him make the leap because in some ways, you know, Terrence Williams is not going to get paid a second contract by the Cowboys. And so I keep hoping that, you know, Devin Street will step up, you know, and sort of follow the same trajectory so that when Williams is gone, we'll have a couple years of Street. And I'm not seeing that yet.
Well, the good news is that Lucky Whitehead sure looks really good.
He does.
I mean, it's crazy. Like, you know, you get these guys in, like Whitehead and Dunn. I'll go ahead and lump Dunn in there, though Whitehead has been a little bit more impressive at this point. I had that flipped before, but Whitehead, the last few practices, really looked great. It's crazy to me that you get these two guys in here who are basically kick return types, you know, and the problem with those guys usually is they don't run great routes. They don't, you know, they're not really great hands catchers usually, especially the smaller ones. They just don't have big hands. They don't feel comfortable stretching out for catches. That has not been the problem for either one of these two guys, and especially Lucky Whitehead. Whitehead has learned all three positions. He was the guy that came out when Dez was hurt to run the Z instead of Street, and he's clearly shown out in the ability to stretch out, catch the ball, do what he needs. Apparently, he's thriving a little bit from what I've heard on special teams. He could be Dwayne Harris plus at this point. I mean, you know, that's a lot of hype, but honestly, like, he's done nothing to tamper any hype at this point, I have to say.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when we talk about someone like Dwayne Harris, we're, you know, I think 3 weeks ago we would have been talking about they're going to need three different players to do all the things that Dwayne Harris did. You know, we're going to need some guy to step up as a gunner on the punt return team. We're going to need a guy to step up as the primary returner on both punts and kicks. And then we're going to need a guy to, you know, to come in and serve as the fourth or fifth receiver. And those are going to be three different guys. And Whitehead looks like he might be able to do at least two, if not three of those. So that's really, really comforting. And you're right. I think it was really interesting to see when Dez was out and then Devin Street was a little bit dinged. They didn't, you know, And they had two receivers on the field. The second receiver on the field next to Terrence Williams was not Cole Beasley. It was Lucky Whitehead.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, in some ways speaks to the fact that Beasley is only a slot receiver, but also to, you know, the way in which they're trying to throw a lot of stuff at Whitehead to see if he can, you know, play multiple positions. And so far he's responded.
Yeah. All right, let's move back again to running backs and or backs in general and the safety group. Little guys part two. So who again has stepped, you know, this is a little bit tougher because, you know, we've had a lot of injuries at running back so far. So we haven't gotten to see our guys yet. Mostly we've seen a guy who will, you know, if he does well, will end up in the practice squad. But what have been your thoughts so far, with the running backs and safeties?
Well, if you had asked me to rank all the position groups on the team from best to worst, these would be the two that I would have to rank as at the bottom. Mm-hmm. I think the running backs get an incomplete for all the reasons you just articulated. We just don't know what they have. You know, Joe Randall has looked good at times, but I've also heard a couple people say that he's not having a very good camp. Lance Dunbar has been okay and injured, and then we haven't seen a single snap out of Darren McFadden. So, you know, a little guy like Gus Johnson has you know, come on and has acquitted himself well and has had a few nice runs. Again, is that because Gus Johnson's really good, or is that because the offensive line is awesome? It's hard to say. So I think that we have to just reserve judgment for the running backs, and I've been doing that pretty much all of training camp. I still sort of feel on some level that there's a chance that we're going to see somebody from another team end up as one of the backs on this team. So for that reason, because I don't think, like offensive tackle, you know, where it's impossible to find an NFL caliber player at cutdown to hay because nobody lets go of NFL caliber offensive tackles. Running back is one of those positions where someone's going to cut a good back. There'll be guys available. I'm for some reason, I'm just not concerned about it. Although, you know, we haven't seen anything yet. I would say the safeties in and of themselves are one of the weaker groups. But the thing that's really important to remember is that both Byron Jones and Corey White have been playing what seems to be as the same position. Or at least they've been both taking reps at that same position. They've both been taking corner reps, but they've also been taking reps as this kind of safety linebacker corner hybrid where – especially when the team deploys a nickel, they'll have Sean Lee as one linebacker and the other linebacker is either Jones or White. And that linebacker both blitzes in the A gap, can peel back and take the tight end. So that linebacker, whatever, or dime, you know, dime safety, whatever you want to call him, tends to be on the strong side so that he can both blitz and or, you know, take the tight end in coverage. Or you know, just like settle back into a zone underneath, so he can run with a tight end and you know pass him off to somebody who's deeper, and then you know you have a really really talented athletic guy in one of the underneath zones. So there's a lot of different things they can do with those guys, and I think that you know the safety, the way we look at the safety group, which probably only has four guys who are going to make the team, and those four guys are going to be the starters, obviously Church and Wilcox, Jeff Heath, who is I think a very underrated player. You know, he's a big contributor on special teams, and he, you know, he gets in there and you know,
he can handle the assignment,
a decent amount of snaps on the defense, and usually acquits himself well. We've got to let go of the vision of Megatron having a big game when a poor young Jeff Heath happened to be in there because Gerald Sensabaugh got injured. And then Danny McRae, who in many ways helps replace Dwayne Harris, but it probably more directly replaces C.J. Spillman as the kind of, you know, safety you don't want to get on the field, but you know,
unless you're punting the ball,
gives you deluxe special team snaps. And so we look at that group and we're like, that's really three guys who we want getting safety snaps. I don't feel so good about that. But then when we add the very athletic White and incredibly athletic Jones to that group, suddenly the group looks a little better.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, with the idea that they're going to go long at corner, they'll probably go short at safety. I mean, I think four safeties is, you know, I mean, I don't know that you can go any shorter than four safeties. I mean, especially even with the guys that have flex to play in that position, and especially since those two backup safeties are two of your best, if not your best, special teams players. So, yeah, I think with the safety group, it's more about. You know, especially in how they fit in the defense, it's about, you know, playing to their strengths. And this is kind of, you know, you and I discussed this briefly, and I'll make this point and move back. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Wilcox struggling, and it's because everyone's seeing these, you know, one-on-one coverage drills, you know, where Wilcox is, you know, covering a guy off the line and, you know, he's holding and grabbing the guys. You know, that's not really what they're asking Wilcox to do at free safety. You know, like they run a lot of cover one and three and two shell and two cover Tampa two, you know, and not as much Tampa two as people think. But still, I mean, he's in zone drops most of the time. I mean, really what it's about is him reading the play, coming downhill to make sure to make a solid tackle. You know, he's just really not in a position to be covering people one on one, especially off the line of scrimmage. I mean, that's just not what he's asked to do a lot. So I wouldn't read too much into that. I think some people are. But, you know, he's really just not going to get asked to do that. Now, Church may, just because he's down near the line of scrimmage a lot in his strong safety spot, and, you know, he's going to be kind of over a top of a tight end on certain points, and if he's not dropping into, like, the flats. But I just think that, you know, the safety group is not – You're right. I would definitely put them near the bottom as far as position groups, but I also don't think I'm not going to lose sleep at this point of the safety position. I think I think they're good enough for us to win, especially with the other talent in other positions. So
I agree, and I think last year bore that out.
Do we need to go any further with running backs? I mean, I would just say, like, it just, we didn't get a lot of any of the running backs. I would say that what we saw of Dunbar looked really good. Randall, for what we've seen, has been everything I thought he would be. He's done a really good job of you know, that kind of teleporting through the seams and on the zones and just, you know, really good big runs. And he, I think he struggled a little bit first in some of the blitz pickup reps I saw, but then has really kind of come on lately and is initiating contact a lot better and doing a better job in that aspect. And he's already a better receiver than DeMarco ever was. I mean, I just hands wise and obviously what he can do with the ball in his hands. You know, DeMarco, whenever they used to dump the ball off to DeMarco, like he can run through a guy, but he's not you know, he's not breaking anybody down and getting around anybody, you know, whereas right. Randall can do that. You know, so and Dunbar really can do that. So anything else to add in that position group? I mean, do you want to talk about Gus Johnson at all? Or
no, I don't think it's – I mean, you watch him against the Chargers, enjoy what he does, and then, you know, a bit of a fond farewell when he gets cut at the end of this training camp.
Yeah, I think all of us should probably just hold off on our feelings about running back until we get – you know, this Saturday is kind of the point I have in my head where it's like, okay, McFadden should be back, Randall should be back. Randall is kind of already back, and Dunbar hopefully should be back at that time. So we'll get like a real look at what these running backs look like.
Yeah.
So maybe for our next podcast, we'll have a little bit better analysis of the running back position for you guys. But let's go ahead and move back to the tight ends and linebackers, unless you had something else.
No, no. That's
okay.
Good.
So the tight ends, linebackers are kind of our last group. Where, you know, obviously, you know, Witten is Witten. And we can all sing his praises all the time. What are your thoughts about some of these, you know, what is Swaim, Hannah, how's Hannah looked? What do you thought about Escobar so far? And then we can move on to the many, many linebackers.
Well, you're certainly right about Witten. He's awesome, and nobody can cover him. You know, the last time we talked, we actually had a conversation about Swaim versus Hannah and the idea that the front office was drafting in as a way to cultivate assets and even as a way to kind of cultivate tradable assets. And we talked at the time that someone like Swaim might be able to knock a guy like Hannah off the roster, and Hannah would be a commodity that would be much sought after in the NFL community so that the Cowboys could flip him for a pick. Mm-hmm. And that still may be the case. But I'm wondering more and more now, particularly after watching the quarterbacks play and seeing that Dustin Vaughn has not progressed at all. You know, after the, you know, an off season in which we heard story after story asking whether or not he was going to be able to supplant Brandon Whedon as the second quarterback.
That's not happening.
That's not happening, folks.
He may not supplant Jameel Showers as the third quarterback.
That's right. Yeah. By the end of camp, we may see him running fourth team.
Yeah.
So I think that they're probably not going to carry three quarterbacks this year unless something bizarre happens. Is I just don't think that the third quarterback deserves to be on the team, especially when this team is so talented and so deep. And so one of the places in which they have a depth that I think can be valuable is at tight end. And so increasingly I'm wondering if they're going to keep four tight ends because they have four guys who do very different things. And Swaim has proven to be a solid blocker and surprisingly effective in the passing game. So the other thing is Escobar. So they're using Escobar a lot in what looked like three wide receiver formations, but he's in a sense playing the slot receiver, or even sometimes they'll go four wide and he plays the slot receiver. He's almost never lined up on the line anymore. There's times when he is, but when you have Swaim and Hannah, that's the great thing about having Swaim and Hannah. You have three people who are you know, either good or plus blockers. And you don't need to have Escobar in that position to be a blocker in the same way anymore. So I'm wondering if we're even going to see Escobar as often in two tight end situations, whereas we might see him more in evident passing situations because he's a matchup nightmare and he's got the best hands on the team. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I know we say that about this every training camp, but I think that this is the year when they really try to find ways to exploit mismatches using Escobar over the middle as well. So I'm very happy with the tight end group and the tight end depth. I think, you know, they're a good, solid, well-coached group. And I think that they're good enough that we'll probably see four tight ends on the final 53.
Well, we kind of skipped over this a little bit, and maybe we should rectify that with just a quick blurb here. But, you know, with that in mind, with four tight ends in mind, do you also think they're keeping a fullback?
I do. Yeah. I think they like the fullback in the offense. I think they want the fullback in the goal line and short yardage.
I think they like Klutz specifically.
And I think they like Klutz.
Yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. So this is something that has come up lately by necessity.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about the backs just now. We didn't talk about Tyler Klutz.
Yeah, that's you know,
that's an oversight on our part. He's the forgettable Klutz.
Yeah. Well, he was definitely forgettable on goal line runs the other day. You know? So.
But he. One of the things we've been talking about when we look at the Cowboys roster of running backs is, well, who's the guy, who's the hammer, who's their short yardage back when it's third and one, you have to get it. And it's true, you know, DeMarco Murray was very good in that role. And I wonder if, in fact, Klutz might not be that guy.
I did too. I mean, especially after seeing what he's done so far. I mean, like you said, they obviously put him in there because he knew the position and knew how to operate his job, and they just were trying to get through practice. But, you know, they ran a stretch play to him on the goal line, and he scored.
And they ran a little fold play to him, you know, on a short yardage situation. He made a nice little move to you know, sort of cut it back and found a little seam. So, I mean... And he's a load,
yeah.
You know, so
honestly, like, I think if you're talking about getting, you know, 1 or 2 yards, and it's just about having someone short and squatty power their way through a linebacker or something,
he's your guy.
He could do that, I think. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I guess that was kind of all that I wanted to bring up, is that it's crazy to me that we signed two fullbacks in the offseason, neither of which were Klutz. And then right before we get into this whole thing, Klutz gets re-signed on the team, and now like all the other fullbacks are afterthoughts. And I mean, Agnew is the only one who's still on the team, right?
Yeah.
And you know, and it's looking very good. Like Klutz is probably going to make the team and have, you know, a variety of roles. I mean, he could even you know, they had him out in packages where he was the pass protector. Do.
Well, yeah. See, that's actually something that's beginning to creep into our assessment of the team, is that, you know, there are certain third down situations. But just say you go, you know, you have several wide receivers, you spread it out, and you have one back in the backfield. What's wrong with having Klutz in there?
Yeah.
You know, you're not trying to fool them. And, yeah. And you know, and if you have to, he can release and, you know, be a safety valve, that kind of thing. So. There may be an expanded role for him as the hammer, in a way, you know, who's both a goal line back and then a reliable blitz pickup guy. So let's turn to linebackers.
Yes, please.
This is a really fascinating position for me, and one I think that for many in many respects is like the running backs, in that there's still a kind of to be determined quality to it. But and some of that has to do with, you know, Rolando McClain's status. I do agree that when he comes back, if and when he comes back, he'll be the starting middle linebacker. But I think, you know, what he does and will affect, in some ways, he's the first domino in a series of dominoes that, you know, in terms of, okay, so if he's there, does that mean Hitchens moves over to the strong side? Does Hitchens remain as one of the backups because he's so valuable as a kind of Swiss Army knife? Has Wilbur taken the strong side job away from him anyway? So Hitchens doesn't really have a chance. Would we just rather have Hitchens as the nickelback? But then again, he might not be the best nickelback because it might be Sean Lee and McClain who are actually better at the nickel. So I think there's a lot of kind of questions that remain unanswered because McClain's absence. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing I'll say is, remember, like, maybe it was even last year at this time, when Alex Albright, or maybe it was 2 years ago at this time,
yeah.
Alex Albright was the kind of like vestigial remnant of the old 3-4 linebackers. You know, he had length. He was a, you know, a special teams guy, but he was also, you know, a kind of backup outside linebacker. And so, as the Cowboys were reinventing their linebacker core, you had, you know, Devontae Holloman, who's, you know, like 6'1", and then you had Alex Albright, who's like 6'5". You had very, very different body types. And one of the things that's happened now is, you know, when the linebackers go into their drills, they all line up, and they all look exactly the same. They're all like 6'2", 225, you know, 235, you know, that range, yeah. That range. They're all small, fast, little guys. And, you know, similar to what we talked about with corner, the other thing that the Cowboys have done this season, done really well, is assemble a deep, deep cadre of linebackers who all can do a lot of different things. And so, you know, I think Lee and McClain, you know, in the dream scenario, are the clear prohibitive starters. But the great thing is behind them, you got guys who can do multiple things. So one of them goes down, you have a lot of different options. You have guys who can play special teams. I think that, you know, one of the big and unheralded offseason acquisitions alongside Corey White, which is to me the other one, is this Andrew Gatchkar, who is a huge upgrade, both in terms of special teams, but also in terms of his ability to play linebacker should he have to. A huge upgrade over Cam Lawrence. You know, Damian Wilson is coming on. I think he's actually a better, more athletic Anthony Hitchens, and in a couple of years he's going to be demanding a starting role. Mm-hmm. And he won't be denied because he's terrific. So they have veteran starters. They have a bunch of young guys, you know, your young bucks chomping at the bit. They've got specialty players. I think it's a good group. To me, the only question is who exactly does what? And that's something that I think the coaching staff is still trying to figure out.
It's a good problem to have. I mean, especially for a team that's had to shuttle in linebackers. I mean, and, you know, no more having to Ernie Sims on the field. You know, I think it's great to have a lot of talent, and if they all can do kind of slightly different jobs, that we can make that work. You know, yes. I mean, Kyle Wilbur, you know, is probably a little bit different than the rest of the group just because he kind of is the last vestige of that, you know, 3-4 team, and he kind of finally found a niche at linebacker, and I think it was 13, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, last year kind of maybe took a step back, but he's really shown out, like I talked about so far in this training camp at Sam, and I think he's got the physical profile maybe more than Hitchens to play with Sam. He's got more length. I think he's probably a little bit better at shedding than Hitchens is. I think Hitchens excels where he can see it and go and kind of, you know, work around. He has a nose for the football and he has good instincts, but I don't know that he's great at, because he does have kind of shorter arms that of stacking and shedding. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how that all plays out, because I agree, like, Hitchens is kind of in a weird spot. If you don't start him at Mike and if you don't start him at Will, is he really the best guy to be that second nickel over McClain or maybe even Lewis at this point? I mean, you know, the question is, you know, what can he provide there, and is that the best use of his skills? And I guess, you know, we're going to find out. But it is kind of an interesting puzzle that all kind of is hinging on the one, you know, double nickel in the middle getting healthy and getting on the field. So, all right. Well, any other linebacker notes before we wrap this whole thing up?
No, I think, you know, I think that covers it. I look forward to hanging out with you next weekend, and you know, maybe some of these questions at running back and linebacker will begin to be answered, and those positions will come into sharper focus.
Yeah, and next week we're going to do, just like we did last year, we're going to do the kind of annual ranking of the roster, of the full 90-man roster. Rabble and I are going to put our heads together and try to figure out, you know, who in the order are the players that are going to produce the best for the Cowboys. And so that's kind of like our guideline.
Yeah, all the way down to the guy we think will produce the least.
Yeah, all the way to the guy that won't be producing, you know, insurance for you know, people that are trying to get car loans or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I think obviously this is always kind of an exercise of futility, because almost half the players that we're going to rank will not only not be on the Cowboys roster, but probably won't be on anybody's roster. So, though, actually, I don't know that you can say that with this team this year. I have a feeling a lot of these guys are going to get cut and are going to get picked up on another team. There's more talent out. I think that's a good bow on this episode, is that I would say it's pretty clear to see that there is a lot more talent on this team than there was last year.
Yeah, I think maybe a year or two ago there was probably 40 to 45 NFL caliber players on the team, and now they're probably 60.
Yeah, easy. All right, so when is that next training camp chat scheduled?
Well, we'll do it again the beginning of next week after our deep immersion football geek weekend, mm-hmm. which, as you were just saying, will allow us to gauge the team's further progress. And, of course, we'll have had a chance to take a look or two at the first preseason game against the Chargers.
All right, great. So before we go, of course, I want to plug Blogging the Boys one more time. Make sure that you're going there for Rabble's updates, all the great articles throughout the preseason and in the regular season, of course. Blogging the Boys is your one-stop shop for all your Cowboys info. It's the fine purveyor of this podcast, so make sure you check them out. Check out their Facebook page, Blogging the Boys, their Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. And until next week, happy trails, everybody.
Happy trails, y'all.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?